going around, checking for history coming about. You're never sure just where it's gonna stay. You suffer through lingering doubt, there is someone who'd spell it out, but things don't work that way. There's so much going on, faces in the crowd belong to a team on which you'd love to play. You're hoping for some permits, but there really is no place for this. Your tattoos, they're gonna fade. They're gonna fade. They're gonna fade. They're gonna puddles around our legs, it hardens. It catches us the quick. You're putting a lot of importance in something you're really just playing a part, and you should take what action you can get. What you show, you're covered in stone. On your flesh, you do better live it more and commemorate less. There's much I don't want to remember. There's nothing I wish lasts forever. Your tattoos, they're gonna fade.
Punk News Podcast episode 542. That was Tattoos Fade by World Inferno. We're going right into it. We're going to start sad this week, and then we'll talk about some news. But unfortunately, we got another sad week we got to talk about. This one's a big bummer. It's sad. There's nothing we can do about it. As the listeners know, I'm sure, Jack Terrycloth of World Inferno Friendship Society passed away last week at the age of 50. It was a surprise. The cause of death was something to do with the heart. I don't know if it was a heart attack or like this was public. Something to do like with that. So totally sad, totally unexpected. No one saw it coming. I know a lot of people are really bummed out. I'm really bummed out. I don't even have anything really prepared for this segment of the show, just because I just kind of wanted to be honest about it. And I am going to do a podcast special. But I almost did one this weekend, but I thought, you know what, maybe that it might not be tasteful if I like, Like, I'm a massive World Inferno fan. I interviewed Jack over 10 times. I saw World Inferno, I think, about 25 times. I threw 4 World Inferno shows. I'm a massive fan, huge fan, but I'm not, like, one of the very closest people to him. So I thought it might be almost like, I don't know if showboating is the right word, but weird if I made the big tribute, you know, or at least off the bat. So I think we're going to cool it off for not out of respect, if anything, and then we'll have a World Inferno or Jack Terrycloth tribute in a couple of weeks, extra podcast. Why we'll be playing Sticks and Stones, World Inferno Rarities, Neurotic Impulse, the Leftover Crack World Inferno combo track, just all that kind of stuff. And I'll be talking about Jack and that kind of stuff. I'll just say, man, like, Jack Terrycloth was the real deal, if you can say that Jack Terrycloth, the person, was real, in that, you know, a lot of people know that when he was in Sticks and Stones, he was Pete Van Tantonio, and then he kind of created this persona, Jack Terrycloth, and became this persona. And so on stage, he'd be talking like he just stepped out of the Maltese Falcon, and he'd be telling these crazy stories, and some of it was lies on purpose. Like, not all the crazy stories that, like, one of the most frustrating and one of the most charming things for me with Jack is I would interview him. One of my favorite interviews I ever did was Jack Terrycloth Has a Cough, which I wrote for Punk News. And I thought Jack was giving me the total 100% truth. And then I interviewed him again. I did a big interview with him about 3 years later. And there was discrepancies between the two interviews, which annoyed me, but also I really liked, because that's Jack Terrycloth. But the point being is the essence of what Jack Terrycloth was, the way he lived his life, his joy for music, I'll tell a quick story. So that was all extremely, he was the real, everything that he spoke about on stage, all the philosophies, all the virtues, he always talked about sincerity. That was all extremely true. It wasn't an act. That the Jack Terrycloth on stage was the Jack Terrycloth at home. And I know that firsthand. But a funny story is before Summer Soiree 1 was supposed to be Mischief Brew, but unfortunately Eric Peterson passed away. And so then I said, and this is before I really threw any shows, so I didn't want to throw a whole lot of money out. So I said to Greg Daly and Bill Cashman, I said, well, what if we just kind of have Jack come down and do like an acoustic Jack Terrycloth kind of thing? And they said, yeah, he'll probably do it. And so I wrote to Jack, and Jack was into the idea. And I kept saying, Jack, how much money do you want? How much money? And he wouldn't answer. And the reason is because Jack Terrycloth refused to speak about money, which was something he always talked about on stage. And in fact, I said to Greg, I think it was Greg Daly, who toured Magic World Inferno and booked a bunch of World Inferno shows and was really helpful to me in booking shows. I said, well, how much should I pay him? And he was like, he'll probably just do it for a bottle of wine, because like he really doesn't care about money. The first time I interviewed Jack Terrycloth, it was an ambush style interview, in that like he didn't know I was going to interview him. I was at the World Inferno Citizen Fish Leftover Crack show during the Deadline era, and Witch Hunt was there too. And at the time, I didn't know that you were kind of supposed to like write to artists beforehand to see if you could interview them. I thought you just showed up at the show and interviewed them after the gig, which honestly is kind of the worst. Well, actually, no, the worst time is to interview them before the gig, you know, but after the gig is not that much better. I'm not saying never do it, because especially like at the low, low levels of punk, that's cool. I mean, well, in the age of the internet, you should always honestly email beforehand, but I didn't know at the time, you know. So I said, Jack, can we do an interview? He's like, sure. And so as soon as I asked him that, this guy comes up to him, grown man, but he's probably like 22, 23. But he's literally crying. He's like, tears are literally coming down his face. And he says to Jack Terrycloth, he says, Jack, I came up from Baltimore. I don't have any money left. I don't have any way to get back to Baltimore. And I'm thinking, you dumbass. It's like, why did you come from Baltimore if you didn't have the $14 for a bus or whatever to get back home? You're stupid. You should suffer for your own, you know, poor planning, you Jack. I'm thinking this. Jack Terrycloth reaches into his pocket and puts a wad of cash in this dude's front pocket. It wasn't $10. You know, I don't know if it was a $50, $100, $200, $500. And later on he told me, oh, that was our guarantee from the night because I don't care and the band was mad at me. I don't know if that was true. It very well may have been. But it was probably at least $50 to $100, and Jack Terry, he didn't care. And that's really who Jack Terrycloth was. He really didn't care about money at all. He didn't care. He's one of the few – a lot of people say they don't care about the confines of life. They don't care about reality. Jack Terrycloth really didn't. He did what he wanted to do when he wanted to do it, and he was just one of these very special people. And I don't know. I'm going. He really was a cartoon character come to life. You say, how does this guy exist in real life? And you say, well, this must be an act for the stage. And then it's like, well, this just must be an act for the interview. And then it's like, oh, this just should be an act when it's after the gig and he's hanging around backstage or with, you know, the fans. That's not really – no, it really is him, this living cartoon character that didn't care about reality, and reality would bend around him. But I don't even know if that's the most important thing about Jack Terry. I think maybe the most – maybe the most important thing is he made so much astoundingly amazing art. I mean, every single World Inferno album is different. They are all amazing. If you haven't checked them out, you got to check out Red Eyed Soul. That is the starter pack, and it is, without question, one of the best punk albums of all time. Probably one of the best 10 punk albums of all time. 10 best albums, not just punk. Red Eyed Soul is absolutely amazing. But I will also say is World Inferno was so cool and so punk. When I did the first Summer Soiree, I had never thrown a show ever before. I had no idea how to throw a show. I said, World Inferno, will you come down and play Summer Soiree 1? But I don't know what I'm doing, but will you come down? And they're like, yeah, we'll come down. And they came down and they kicked ass and they were amazing. And it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. The place was so packed. I don't know. I know we sold the exact limit of tickets we were allowed to sell, which was 175. But I don't know what – somehow the place was – 250 people were in there. I have no idea how – because I had my man KB Vickers working the door. So somehow 75 extra people got in. It was so hot. The fire alarms were going off. World Inferno was amazing. There's people crowd surfing. And if you listen to one of the podcasts, Adam and I tell the story. There's people crowd surfing with these bags of liquid for some reason. One dude jumped off the balcony, which wasn't cool at the time. And I'm still kind of mad about. But now that no one really got hurt, I think it was kind of cool. But it wasn't cool at the time because someone really could have got hurt, you know. And World Inferno, I'd never seen a show before. I was just some dude. I mean, they knew me a little bit because I interviewed them. But they could have been you know what, we only work with people that we know. Or we've played Philly many times. So we kind of just work with the bookers that we know. World Inferno came down and killed it. And honestly, they helped me out. And that, I think they made me think I was, doing the things, but they were kind of holding my hand and doing from behind the scenes. And Jack Terrykoff was the man, truly an amazing human being. There has never been someone like him, and there will never be anyone like him again. And I'm really sad that he's gone. But at least, I mean, if you look at it this way, if you look at this, this might be a weird way to look at it. Hallie can tell me if it's a weird way to look at it or not. If you imagine life as a game and you can win 100 points, right? Most people probably win 10 points. You know, maybe if people have a job they hate and they just do it just to get by, you know, maybe that's 10 points. Or maybe someone's got a job they hate, but they got a family and they have fun. Maybe that's 50 or 60 points. You know, even though Jack Terrykoff passed away far too soon, in the game of life, I'm saying Jack Terrykoff won 90, 95 points. Just the amount of art that he did, the way he lived life and refused to be what society said a person should be, and just his lasting impact on people. Hallie, is that a weird way to phrase it?
No, I think that's really cool, actually. Yeah, just that someone fully lived their vision of what they as an artist, what they wanted their life to be, and influenced so many people and got to play the sickest shows, just the most unbridled joy at their shows. Right. Yeah, you're talking about someone that just really lived life. Yeah. Turned up to 11, whatever you want to call it, you know? I mean, I don't really know much about his personal life, but I think, yeah, as an artist, this is someone that lived by his own rules and made that work. Lots of people are like, oh, I'm going to shirk all the rules and I'm going to make my own weird music. And then nobody cares. Nobody likes it. This is someone that was able to do something so oddball and so uniquely him. And then he was able to get so many people on board with that. And it's really a pretty beautiful thing. Most people don't get that. So yeah, I'm with you.
Do you think Jack Terrykoff was right to give all that money to that guy that didn't plan his route home? Because this has puzzled me forever, and it will always puzzle me, you know?
Yeah, because it's exactly like you said. He just didn't care. He didn't care about the money, you know? Which is again, it's so beautiful. He's just take this. I don't need it. I don't need this for this. Take it. get back to Baltimore. But yes, I see, you know, I could see you like watching out of the corner of your eye being like, why did this dumbass just walk away with a wad full of cash?
Well, you might not have any big story, but I know World Inferno played the Chris Gethard show once. What was it like when they played the show?
Well, so it was just like, so the steampunk thing, I just could never wrap my head around it. I was like, it's like theater, but it's like, I don't know, it's cabaret and it's like punk. And I just couldn't, I had World Inferno songs that I really liked, but I never just dove into like, the scene. I never dove into their scene and what they were doing. And then they played Gethard's show and it was so exciting. And their fans, you know, many of whom were my friends, were like going so completely apeshit that I was like mad at myself. I was like, man, why couldn't I have gotten into this? You know, I wasn't like, oh, I missed the boat, because I really do feel like that music is just not for me. But I was like mad that it's not for me. Like, I wished it had been for me, because I would have loved to have been like part of that. You know, just people were so passionate about it. And I do, you know, people throw this word around a lot in a way that like kind of diminishes it. But I just do think there is, you know, that scene was a family. And for the people that were like there and in it, it just like had incredible meaning. And you look at that from the outside and you're like, man, that's fucking cool. That's a cool thing to be a part of, you know? So I'm really glad that I got to see them on the Gethard show also, because like it was like our teeny tiny TV studio. I don't know how many people, you know, at that stage in their career were ever able to see them in a venue so small. I mean, there were probably, you know, 50 people in attendance at the most. So I felt really, really lucky that I was like, oh, okay. I get this. I really, really get how special this is.
It, crazy. I know you just got into the band. Do you have any comments, like being a newish fan, which is maybe the best kind of fan to be, because that means you haven't checked out. You have the bountiful crop in front of you, whereas I have the bountiful crop behind me. I can still enjoy it, but it will never be quite sparkling new.
Well, like it's kind of interesting because I was reading punk news for quite a while before I got involved. And the thing that drew me to the band was the band picture, and everyone looked so, you know, like dapper. And then reading the interviews with Jack Terrycloth and everything, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I have to check them out. And like the past year, I think, is when I've finally been able to do, like, just sit and be able to listen to them. I am very grateful that I was able to live at a time and in a world where Jack Terrycloth existed and made great art, made great music. I didn't have the pleasure of seeing them live or knowing or interacting with them, but just like the record, his music and his voice, like they're all consuming. And I always found that they give you the power that you need, like without fail. And that's the sign of a great band, a great person, a great lyricist. So he will not be forgotten by a long shot.
Well said, beautifully said. Jack Terrycloth, RIP. We're going to be missing him for a long time. We're going to be talking about him on the show, and that's just how it's going to have to be, I'm afraid. I think Hallie and them are going to play a track. Hallie, what's your track that you're going to play?
So this was one that I just loved, and I you know, it's definitely not one that I don't think it's one like of like their fan, like a fan favorite. Sorry, it took me a really long time to spit that out. But this was like, I've talked about this comp on the podcast before because I loved it. This is the song that they did for the Rock Against Bush comp. And I mean, it's such a it's such an insightful song about what it is like to live in a country when you do not agree with the policies of that country. And I am kind of surprised that this song, at least to my knowledge, didn't have like a big resurgence in the Trump years, because it just like hits that nail on the head, you know, of that discomfort of being from and living in a place that you think is just behaving terribly. So this song is like such a killer song. And in case, I think it's a good one to play just in case people missed it in their, you know, in their catalog, all the material they put out. This song is called Expatriate Act.
Expatriate Act, the only release on Rock Against Bush, released nowhere else. So everyone should pick an excellent, excellent song. Excellent pick, Hallie. And then, Em, what's the track that you're going to play?
I've been listening to All Borders Are Porous to Cats a lot lately. And my favorite song off that is Three Parts WTF. So that's the song I'm going to play.
All right, so we're going to play Expatriate Acts and Three Parts WTF, both by World Inferno, R.I.P. Jack, and then we'll be back and start the show regular, I guess. We'll be right back.
What America do I live in if not this one, where they think they're exporting is not me? This land is my land, wherever I stand, only that money belongs to thee. The right of history and our history of rights, the life is dragon. That's how the gated communities I can see that no matter what I live in, what that exported is me. This land is my land, wherever I stand, I'm seeing the funny papers. We'll be right back. regards, leaving your cassette tapes with the car. Transparent Adar, it's not what I'm looking for, but I've always had my back at least so far. Broken knuckle, broke heart, won't quit, don't start. I'm calling favors, please look into your heart.
And that was World Inferno. We might sneak in a little bit more later on in the show, and we are going to do a World Inferno. Is it tasteful if we do a World Inferno special? I feel like it is.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so let's hit the news. Fittingly, we're going to talk about the Misfits. Jack Terrycloth, huge Misfits fan. Jack Terrycloth, actually, when he was in Sticks and Stones, he used to dress like he was in Samhain. If you look at some of those old Sticks and Stones, he's got the Devil Lock. He's got the black, not gauntlets, but essentially they're gauntlets. Anyways, the Misfits are playing Riot Fest, but not Riot Fest 2021, which hasn't happened yet. Riot Fest 2022. And Punk News writer Ronaldo Mantadine actually did a really funny joke on the Riot Fest Facebook, which went viral, if you will. He said, yeah, but who's playing Riot Fest 2023? And so, you know, this is a while away, September 17, 2022. The original Misfits are playing. So that's going to be Glenn Danzig, Jerry Only, Doyle, as well as Dave Lombardo of Slayer and AC Slade. And so the only other band announced so far for Riot Fest 2022 is My Chemical Romance. But it begs the question. Oh, and also the big thing is they're doing all of Walk Among Us live, which is cool. I mean, it's cool. However, if you go see them live, they do it all live anyway, just not in order, because there's only like 60 Misfits songs, and live they play like 45 of them. So, it's like when the Dwarves do all of like Blood, Guts, and Pussy, or Rancid, All Out Come the Wolves. It's like, well, you guys always do All Out Come the Wolves, just not in order, you know. So the question is, A, is it cool if they're doing it in order? Do you enjoy albums in order? And also, you know, when the Misfits first played, the first show was Riot Fest. I think this was the second in New Jersey, up in Newark, maybe it was like the second or third or fourth. I don't know. One of the early ones was in Newark. Maybe that was the first East Coast one. And that was a, quote, event, in that people were spending $1,000 on tickets, $1,500 on tickets. It was sold out in like 5 minutes or a minute. It was jam-packed. It was crazy. It was literally an event of the season, if you will. Like, people were like, I can't believe I get to see the Misfits. But now they've done, I don't know, 13, 14 shows, something like that. Is the Misfits playing an event still? Or is it just, you know, okay, it's the Misfits. Like, okay, it's the Smashing Pumpkins. Okay, it's the Pixies. You know, Hallie Bullitt, what do you think? And do you like the Misfits, Hallie Bullitt?
I do like the Misfits. I am such a sucker for album shows. I'm like exactly the kind of person that they do those for, because there is something about like it that just like taps into the very heart of the nostalgia for like albums that you truly loved, where you just like there. It's not it. it's the songs that you love, but it is, it's like the shape of the whole album and the way the songs flow into each other. Like if you really were super, super into an album, that like that's part of it too. And so I think it's so fun to like recreate that, you know, live. So I know people think that that's kind of cheesy, but I absolutely love it. I'm wondering, you know, the last time that I saw you know, Danzig play, you know, he had just like a complete meltdown on stage. He was like angry at someone in the crowd and kept arguing with them like during the whole set. He like stormed off and sat in his trailer for a while and then he like came back. And like, so I'm wondering if there's something about just like the flow of the album that might like maybe just like keep him focused, just like keep him on stage. He'll like play all the songs. I don't know. John, you're definitely a bigger fan than I am. Is like, is this going to be cool? Like, will you, do you want to see this?
Yes. I mean, if someone said, John, do you want to go see it right now? I'd be like, hell yeah, man. Will I fly out to Chicago for it? I don't know about that. Cause I saw him in Newark in Philadelphia, and honestly, everyone lied to themselves in that the Newark show was terrible. It wasn't terrible because the misses themselves were awesome. But the hockey rink, the sound was horrible in the hockey rink. It was literally hard to see the band unless you got like, you know, $1,000 ticket, which I got the quote cheap $100 ticket. And everyone lied to themselves and said, oh, it was great. But it honestly was hard to hear. It was difficult to see. It wasn't that good. The Philly show, amazing. Absolutely amazing. Way better sound, way easier to see. Absolutely astoundingly great show. Definitely one of the best reunion shows I've ever seen. I'm trying Amoebix, Misfits, Sam Hain, which is just basically Danzig. Those are probably the three best reunion shows I've ever seen. I'm thinking if I saw any other like amazing ones that were, I probably have, but it's escaping me right now. Honestly, as to full album shows, I kind of don't like full album shows, and here's the reason why. I've been scarred. Slayer did a tour where they're like, all right, we're going to do our set, and then we're going to do all of Rain in Blood, and then at the Rain in Blood, and at the end, we're going to do Rain in Blood, and we get covered in blood. And I went to the concert, and the whole time, I'm like, I can't wait for the breakdown in Rain in Blood. I can't wait for the breakdown. And so basically, I didn't enjoy the entire concert because I'm waiting for the 15-second breakdown at the very end of the concert. You know what I mean? And so the fact that I know what's coming, it doesn't let me live in the moment. So as a fan, I would certainly go to this. Will I fly out to Riot Fest and get a hotel and plane tickets? Honestly, probably not. If it was in Philadelphia, I would definitely go. But I think I prefer – actually, I'm going to slightly change my stance, though. Because I've seen the Misfits twice now, and I've seen them do the, quote, Misfits set, which honestly, if you look at the Misfits set, it's always bizarre. Like, one of the things I like about – like you know, I'm just like the Rolling Stones, they'll open with Jumpin' Jack Flash, or they'll open with Start Me Up. You know, they have certain openers, certain mid-period songs, certain closers, you know. Bruce Springsteen, same thing. The Clash, they usually would open with London Calling, or, you know, actually, after London Calling came out, they only opened with London Calling, I believe, you know. So certain bands, the Misfits will open up with like Green, like Death Comes Ripping or Green Hell, and then they'll do like Die Die My Darling, like song 17 out of like 38. It's like, that's your, why are you doing like your closer, like song 7? Like their set lists are just like, it's almost like someone just threw a bunch of songs in the air and then let them hit the ground and all right, here's our set list. So now that I've seen that twice, it would be cool to see something, as Hallie said, with a structure, because that album definitely does have a structure. So.
And what do you think? Like, I saw people online being like skeptical, or like I saw people sort of just being like, well, this isn't like, this is like a lame setting to see the Misfits in. Like, it's this big festival. And, you know, I guess people perceive the festival as being kind of bro-y, which wasn't really my experience when I went a few years ago. I didn't feel like it was super bro-y. But, like, what do you think about seeing a band like the Misfits at a festival like this? John.
Well, listen, I got no problem with Misfits getting paid. I mean, when I saw Misfits in Newark, Murphy's Law, Jimmy Gestapo, Murphy's Law, he's like, this is a victory. We never got paid, but we influenced everybody. Every band has been influenced by, you know, the New York punk scene, which probably isn't true, but it's kind of true, you know. So I got no problem with Danzig getting paid. I mean, and Jerry Only, and the whole, you know, I do kind of wish that Des Cadena and Robo got some cash, but... Well, you know, listen. Well, it is mostly Danzig, so I'm glad Danzig is getting paid. I think tickets are a little, well, $100 for a ticket, a little expensive. You know, $300 way expensive for a ticket. I'm not a fan of that, but is that the worst crime in the world? No. As to do I have a problem seeing Misfits at Riot Fest? No, I don't have a problem with seeing Misfits. The Misfits are not going to play, you know, friggin' the Trocadero in Philadelphia. You know, Misfits are not going to play the right. Blank Club in San Jose, 100 capacity. You know why? Because if that's what they got to do, then it's just going to be Danzig playing the, you know, 5,000 people. Or like, it's either you get this or you get nothing. So I'll take that. So, yeah, I'd love for Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and Charlie Watts and Bill Wyman to come to my living room and play a show just for me, you know? But it's probably not going to happen, so I'll take what I can get.
Yeah. Take what you can get, fans.
I'm going to brag right here. One time I interviewed the Melvins, and so it was actually before the gig. And so the road crew guy let me in, and they were just starting sound check. And for sound check, the Melvins do a mini, like 20 minute concert. So I got my own Melvins concert for like 20 minutes. And honestly, it was extremely rad. It was so rad. The Melvins played me. It was really cool.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It was. And not only that, is they did songs that they don't usually do live, which was really cool, you know. So anyway, brag
it
over.
It is kind of like they played. It is a little like they played your living room.
Yeah, I know. And more. Will you go check this out or not? And why is Danzig the greatest?
I think it was written in a prophecy somewhere, and it has been fulfilled. his existence. I would see this in a heartbeat. I don't know. I know one year, or well, before all this happened, Riot Fest would like come to Toronto, but they'd have different bands. And like if they were doing that, like I'd go see this, like, because it'd be awesome. This is so. My Chemical Romance were really like the Misfits are one of their big influences, and they covered Astro Zombies. For a Tony Hawk compilation album. So it'd be so cool if like they come up and, you know, they do a little like the song together or something. Like that would be really cool. I do really like the Misfits, so I think this would be really interesting to see, and it'd be really cool to see with Danzig. When I started getting into the Misfits, it was when Devil's Reign came out. So I was about 10 or 11. And they were playing in Toronto at like a dive bar, and I really wanted to go. And that wasn't the original lineup, obviously, but I really wanted to go. So I was like, oh, you know, can we go to this and all that? And it's like 19 plus, so like there's no way in hell. But just to have that moment of like finally seeing them with like the best lineup, like that would just be insane.
I really, really like the mental image I'm getting of 10-year-old you rocking out to the Misfits. I'm going to just live in that for a second. That's so good.
Hallie Bullet, at my age, is it ungainly to wear Misfits? When I wear a Misfits t-shirt in college, I'm like, yeah, the Misfits, I'm so cool. No one knows what this means. They've seen the skull, but they don't know what it means. Now everyone wears the Misfits shirt. You know what I mean? If I wore it now, I'd feel like a tool.
I mean, that more than any other logo has just been totally like, I don't know, co-opt, right? Like what co-op? Why did it just become like this universal? It's such a mystery to me. I would love if someone would break down the history of that to me. Like, how did the Misfits logo just become like a generic like skull that just appears on people's t-shirts who don't like the Misfits? It just, I guess it speaks to how powerful a logo it is, right?
Check this out. When I went to the San Jose swap meet in San Jose, which is predominantly Mexican-American people, they had like bootleg belts there with the Misfits skull on it, like next to like bootleg, like My Little Pony belts or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, weird, right? You know? So anyways, Misfits rule. Everyone agrees. Speaking of something else that it rules, Spitboy, they're putting out a compilation of all the material, and that's going to be out via Don Giovanni, New Jersey's finest record label, or one of New Jersey's finest record label. That is going to be out June 25. It's called What Our Little Girl. It's called Body of Work, 1990-1995, and they released a new remastered single, What Are Little Girls Made Of? M, Spitboy, thumbs up, thumbs down, and do you know the Spitboy Pete DeRoti connection. No, wait, I'm wrong. Am I wrong about that? I'm totally wrong about that. Forget that. What do you think of this? What do you think of this track? And what are you excited for this compilation?
Spitboy, huge thumbs up. I really liked this track. I thought it was good. And I will definitely be checking out the compilation album. It's so good when bands that were so big and then kind of, I don't know, got kind of shoved to the back are getting like these releases and getting their stuff remastered. I really like to see it. It's really good and definitely going to be checking it out.
Yeah, of like all the good music that came out around this time, I just don't feel like Spitboy is like a band that's like talked about. So I just think that like that's exactly what these kind of like remastered. Also, apparently, like it's just gonna sound better. It's gonna sound better than the stuff that people have been able to get of theirs for like decades. So that's awesome too, that it's just been reworked in that way. But like, this is exactly why you do like a big reissue. Like, well, I guess it's not a reissue, but this is why you like put the spotlight on an old band and re-release their stuff like this. So I think this is cool that Don Giovanni is doing this. And I love this tune. I thought this tune was so cool. Did you already know this song, John?
I know a little bit about Spitboy. I mean, honestly, I think most of the stuff is kind of strewn throughout like singles, honestly. Yeah. I know they've got like one album and like a split, but I don't even know if the split is legit. But I'm glad that they're putting it. So the answer is no, I was not familiar with this song. I think the song is cool. And honestly, like discography compilations are totally cool. And it's great when you can get a band's entire stuff on like one disc. Like that's cool, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, this is cool. I'm excited for this, and I think Don Giovanni is going to do a great job. Speaking of great jobs, the Hears Collective have released a new track. Hears is a Philly grindcore band. They're putting out a record called The Third 100 Songs, which essentially is a compilation of their dozens of 7-inches and tapes and digital tracks they've put out. The new track is called Affection and Care, and it's about almost 3 minutes long, which is about 2 minutes and 40 seconds longer than your average Hears track. And well, I'll just kick it off. Is I saw Hears once. It was them. Who were they playing? Oh, I know. It was the not FDH record party. It was I'll think of it. Well, I'll keep talking and then I'll think of it. It was a record label party, and I had heard them, and I had heard them before, but they came out, and I didn't know this. It's just the singer, what's the singer's name? I'm sorry, I'm crashing and burning here. I know the singer also has a side project. SRA Records was the record label party, FYI. The singer of Hears is, well, nuts. I can't remember. Well, anyway, it'll come to me. Anyways, the singer also has a side. But anyways, it's just a singer and a guitar player, and literally behind him was literally a wall of amps, like a literal wall, maybe 25 amps. And I don't even know if they were all plugged in, but it just looked awesome. And it was super loud, and it was like super savage and very avant-garde. And it was avant-garde and weird grindcore. And I just thought it was fantastic. And I think this band is very cool. The only question is when you listen to this track, it's cool. Actually, it's real cool. I can only listen to about 10 minutes of grindcore before I'm like, all right, that's enough grindcore. I mean, grindcore is cool, but 10 minutes for me is enough. Hears grindcore can be very weird and avant-garde and put in, you know, like dance music or electro and stuff like that. But sometimes just straight up grindcore. This track is just straight up grindcore. The question is, grindcore has been done to death. There are many, many grindcore bands, and most of them are not interesting. But does Hears make it interesting? Because A, they are a trans LGBT A band, which the vast majority of grindcore bands are not. And does that alone make them interesting? And does that make it an artistic statement of itself? I would say yes.
I'm totally with you. I have like my limit for how long I can listen to music like this.
Jenna Pup is the singer of Hears.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I like this started and I was like, this is so good. Like this is so heavy and like the blisteringly heavy. And I was like super into it and like enjoying it. And then by the end, I was like really starting to feel anxiety. Like I just was like, I can't listen to any more Cookie Monster screaming. Like I can't, it's so fast that I started to feel like my heart was like accelerating. I was like, this song is gonna give me a heart attack. But it's very, you know, listen, it's effective. It's super effective. It's incredibly impressive, like what they're able to do as a band. I feel like I feel like you would have a higher tolerance for this than me. Yes.
It's kind of funny because there are certain like things I go to if I'm feeling anxious and it'll calm me down, and this is one of them.
I love that.
Just because, like, the lyrics are, they're nice, you know what I mean? Like, they're really good lyrics. They're not like, I'm going to chop you up and put you in the freezer, you know, like some, like, grindcore is. So, yeah. But no, this is great.
Gears has many, many tracks with guest singers. There are two with Marissa Paternoster. I've heard one, I think. It's fantastic. Like, Paternoster just goes insane. And so Jen is going insane. Paternoster is going insane. Oh, it's like, it's amazing. It's amazing. So it's cool. I don't know if I can handle 100 tracks. You know, I'm just being real. But I like that statement in of itself, in that it's too much for you to take. Like it's so destructive and damaging. You can't take it all, which I think is great. But the music is why you should be nice to people, which is cool. So definitely, I would say, cool band, awesome artistic statement. That's what I'll say. Let's play a song. Hallie or Em, who wants to kick off with the next song?
Go ahead, Em.
Oh, okay. This actually fits really well because I was going to play Affection and Care by the Heroes Collective.
Wham! So,
here we go.
Cool band to listen to. amazing band to see live, for sure. And hopefully one day they'll play a Punk News event. We'll see. So let's talk about a band that will most definitely play the next Punk News event, Green Day. Green Day has re-announced their tour, which I think has been canceled twice so far. It's called the Hella Mega Tour. Weezer and Fall Out Boy and the Interrupters are also playing. So a lot of 90s nostalgia there and some new spice as well with the Interrupters, which they've been around a while. As a side note, I was listening to I liked the Interrupters, then I hated them, and now I like them again. I didn't ever hate them, but now I listen to the third album. It's a good album, people. I mean, like, it's not deep, but it's a good album. Anyways, the point being, Green Day, they're going back on tour. They released a new track. It's called Pollyanna. And this is a genuine question meant without any implication or underlying statement. What is the purpose of Green Day in 2021? That is, you know, in Green Day in the mid-1990s, they made the youth feel – They attached to the youth in that they were kind of nicer punk and that it's not crust, you know, it's not, you know, crass where it's super political and kind of too scary to get into. Green Day, they're like, you know, I'm not down with things as a whole, but I'm not so scared that you can't listen and identify with me, listener. We're Green Day. But that was 25 years ago. What purpose does Green Day serve now in 2021? Making money? Doing the same thing for young people? Because when I saw Billy Joe Armstrong's spin-off band, which I can never remember the name of,
Pinhead Gunpowder?
No, they only put out like one album. It was like him and his son, I think, or something. They had like a red logo that they took from the Warriors. I'll think of it, or I won't. Anyways, when I went and like I saw that band at the First Unitarian Church in Philadelphia. And I was lucky enough to get I just got tickets on a whim, but apparently it was like super hard to get tickets. But I went, and honestly, the audience was 18 to 22 for the most part. And there was older people there too, but a ton – actually, there was like 14-year-olds there. There was a ton of super, super young people there to see Green Day in like 2018 or whatever year that was. Hallie Bullitt, what purpose does Green Day serve in 2021?
So I'm going to ask another question and then I'm going to like circle back to your question, which is like, I found myself asking myself, like, what is the purpose of a song like this in 2021? Because like, right. I felt like they sort of, listen, I'm not inside their minds, but I felt like they were like, oh, everyone's coming out of COVID. Everyone's going to want like a super optimistic, like the optimistic, the feel good song of the decade, you know, or something. It felt like something about it felt weird and calculated and like, just naive. It seemed like phony to me, you know, like this kind of everything's going to be all right song. I guess that was the question I found myself asking. Like, is everything going to be all right? Does anyone buy that? Like, I don't know if anyone buys that. So the songs like this to me that are just like not sort of sophomorically, like naively peppy and like cheerleadery. Like, it feels very irrelevant to me. Like, I just sort of feel like who's buying this? I'm like, who believes this? And the world does need some optimism right now. Like, I'm not saying like no one write optimistic songs, like there's no place for them, but this kind of like dumbed down, just like overly simplified, like everything's going to be fine, everybody. Like, it just, I don't buy it. And to be frank, I don't think Billy Joe buys it. He's like, seems like a fairly intelligent middle-aged man. Like, I'm sort of like, what planet are you on, dude? So it just seemed like phony baloney to me, you know. I just was like, I just wanted to call bullshit on the whole thing. It's like a perfectly fine pop song. It's like, but so to wrap around your question, John, it just was like, I think if Green Day wanted to make music that was like true to those guys and who they are now and it felt genuine, I think maybe possibly there would be a place for them. But if this is what they want to do, then like I sort of say no. Like I don't totally feel like there's a place for this band doing this thing. You know what I mean?
I know. I was trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. Honestly, it's like I wonder if Billy Joe like has like crossed into Bono territory. It's like, you know, the world really needs something to bring them together right now, and I will write that song, and that will bring the world together. You know, I wonder if Billy Joe is just on another planet these days, and he really can't relate. You know, which I mean, it can be not, like when you get certain like when you're famous, you don't have the problems that people like. You know, oh, I gotta go to the supermarket. You know, I gotta pick up the dry cleaning. I you know, I gotta pay my rent. Billy Joe doesn't have those problems, so it can be hard to write music in that context. And so maybe he's just looking for stuff. I'm just trying to get the benefit of the doubt. I'm not a Green Day hater, but I'm not a Green Day fan. And I just feel – I agree that this stuff rings hollow, and it does feel opportunistic and almost calculated on via a marketing path, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And more, are we wrong?
Well, I have a two-part answer to – what's the role of Green Day, but I hated the song. I couldn't do it. I just know. I mean, I get, hopefully their heart was in the right place, but it does seem like a, you know, their marketing people were like, oh, give us one of these, you know? So Green Day in 2021 is two things. Their function is two things. It's as a live band and as a, I don't know the best way to put this, so I'm going to explain it, but as a gateway band. So first of all, I have seen Green Day twice live, and they were amazing. They were so, so good. My first concert was Green Day. It was kind of funny because it was in April in 2013, and it was right after Billy Joe Armstrong got out of rehab. So like we got tickets just like by luck. And that night when we were driving home from Toronto, there was this huge ice storm, and we were without power for like 2 days afterwards, but it was such a good show. And then I saw them touring Revolution Radio in 2017 and at the Budweiser stage, and they were crazy, and it was so good, and it was just a wonderful time. And with that, it was interesting because I was in the pit, and there was a family of three children and like two parents. So the parents had formed like a box around the kids so they wouldn't get like pushed or anything. It was dumb. And they like kept moving them closer to like the stage and displacing all these people, so it's like no one can really move when they're there. But anyway, they looked like they were having fun, so that's all that matters. So I think they are, like a great live band, put on a good show, you know, all that business. So, purpose number one and purpose number two, the first song that I ever learned the words to was Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day. I heard that on the radio when I was about six, and, then it was just kind of like, again, slowly like got into them over like the next couple years. And then, when it was finally like, I kind of exhausted all of their stuff, it was like, all right, now it's time to go to the influences. And then I had like the time where I was only listening to like old punk music. So like I got into the Sex Pistols and, Dead Kennedys and like the Clash and all that kind of stuff. So, Green Day was a huge part of like me being aware and getting into punk music, because other than that, like, I wouldn't have heard really anything. Like, you know, I wouldn't have known to search out this or that. I'm sure it would have found me somehow, but, yeah. So I think they exist to get people aware of kind of a broader spectrum of music where it's like, oh, this sounds neat. And then you look into the stuff. So Green Day's purpose. They also need to like start making better songs, but
yeah. They like stole this line from a Rod Stewart song in this song. Do you know the one I'm talking about, John? I'm not trying to leave you out of this. I'm just assuming that you're too young to know this Rod Stewart song that I'm talking about.
Let me see if I can pull the line.
It's from Young Turks. It was like, don't let him get you down, don't let him push you around, right? Like he Billy Joe just like took that. He's obviously like sort of like tipping his hat to Rod Stewart there, but it was like, I'm listening to this song, and like I said, like I didn't think it was a terrible song. I just thought it was like, it was fine, it was a pop song. But like I heard that line, and I had to like force myself to keep listening to the Green Day song, because all I wanted to do really was turn it off and go listen to the Rod Stewart song. I was like, oh, Young Turks is like fucking awesome. I was like, I'd rather be listening to that. That's like a cheesy pop song, but that's like got some real like heart. That's got like some real heart to it, I think. But yeah, I don't know. Green Day. Yeah. Do better or don't do it to me. Like, it's like try harder, or just like go like, you know, enjoy your millions. And like, you know, maybe you don't have to make music to me. I don't know.
As a side note, not to get off track, but on like listeners, like the listeners probably think as Rod Stewart as some terrible cheesy like soft rock or 80s rock guy, and he is. But like go back and like read the lyrics to like Tonight's the Night and like Hot Legs and Maggie May. Rod Stewart is like exceptionally pervy. Like read those lyrics. I'll just read it to you, right? Well, I'm gonna put my right. So, like Tonight's the Night. And when you're listening to it, like on the radio, you're like Tonight's the Night. But then like when you read the lyrics, like and while he like he even sings it pervy. Like listen. Haley and M, cover your ears. Listen. Come on, angel, my heart's on fire. Don't deny all your man's desire. You'd be a fool to step the tide. Spread your wings and let me come inside.
Oh boy.
Don't say a word, my virgin child. Just let your inhibitions run wild. The secret is about to unfold upstairs before the night's too old. I mean, this guy. Oh, my God. Oh, here we go. This is maybe one of the less pervy lyrics, but listen, when you hear Tonight's the Night and you hear the way he says this, I'm like, oh my God, Russell was like the dirtiest old man. Kick off your shoes and sit right down. Loosen off that pretty French gown. Listen to the way he like he savors it like an old pervert. Like listen. And honestly, there's like something to be said there. It's like when people think of like love songs, they think of you know like I don't know Burt Bacharach, or like you know like they think of basically like Brian Ferry, like a sophisticated genteel man saying, "Baby, tonight's the night," you know. But then we recontextualize it as an old pervert singing this song, but singing it well, and that's Rod Stewart. And maybe there's something artistically interesting about the flasher on the corner of the street singing love songs. Think about it. Honestly, like, read these lyrics from Rod Stewart. The dude's a perv. I'm sorry. Anyways.
It was, like, from that rock and roll era where, like, rock singers were just supposed to, like, exude sex, right? In this way that now to us seems so, like, it seems so, like, just trying way too hard. Like, it's really the opposite, I think, of what we, like, really find, like, sexy or like appealing now as like a society. It's like that is just like it's just trying too hard. Why is your shirt unbuttoned that far? Like no one's finding that appealing now.
I would say counterattack, but not counterattack, but interesting spinoff though. Let's look at Megan Thee Stallion. Let's look at Cardi B, Nicki Minaj, very sexualized.
Yeah, you're right. So what is it? It's like
creepy dudes? We're tired of creepy dudes?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. I don't want to say a yes to that because I have to think about it harder, but like maybe.
Let's contemplate that and think about that and solve that very complicated question in a future episode. We will discuss that. Honestly, I think I'm not trying to be a prude, and if people want to be sexual on stage or whatever, that's fine. But I do feel as though the money behind it is pushing it in a certain way, which is not cool. You know what I mean? But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. You know, like, how come all the pop stars are, like, super sexualized, except for Taylor Swift, you know? Or also, what's her name? Her name starts with a C. Carly Rae Jepsen. Not super sexualized, but you know? But, like, if you look at Lady Gaga, if you look at, you know, Nicki Minaj, if you look at Beyonce – very often very sexualized. Is that because that's what they want, or that's because what's suggested? I don't know. I really don't know, you know. So
see, I don't think of Gaga as sexualized. Like, she is sexy, but like she's just like she's just sort of like artsy and like she's empowered hot in every way. You know what I mean? Yeah, she's true, just true, like true, just like living her artistic truth and like being in her power, you know? So yes, I think there's something very sexy about that. But I think one of the things I love about her is that she's also like not afraid to look like horrifying or ugly, or you know what I mean? It's not all about like that she needs to be like alluring. She's like perfectly comfortable being like really like scary or terrible looking, you know? I think that's cool.
Is there an analog between Lady Gaga and Debbie Harry?
Oh, I mean, yeah, for sure, right? Because I feel like anyone that's Gaga's age that was growing up back then was like, you know, definitely looking up to Debbie Harry. She was the one, right? Her and Cyndi Lauper were like the ones that little girls were like, oh, I want to be her, you know?
And not to drag this conversation up, though, I would argue that Cyndi Lauper and Debbie Harry are sort of opposites of each other, and that Debbie Harry is like this idealized form that no one can obtain, while Cyndi Lauper is the kind of weird girl next door, marketing-wise, I'm saying, as they've been pitched.
Yeah, also, and just like in terms of their actual personalities when you hear them interviewed, right? Like Cyndi Lauper, well, she's wacky. She's really, really wacky. Debbie Harry is like wacky also, but like, like you're saying, in like a more reserved and a little less attainable way, right?
I will say Cyndi Lauper's first album, underrated pop album, excellent, excellent pop album, that first Cyndi Lauper album. People should check that out.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, this is kind of position next to Green Day, but we start talking about Cyndi Lauper for some reason. Against Me. Against Me is now working on recording their new album, which follows 2006 Shapeshift with Me. The new album, they basically started the early phase of recording the new album because Lars Jane Grace bought some kind of new gizmo. It is a Yamaha T50. I don't know what that is. It looks like a mixing desk or something. I don't know. It's some kind of gizmo. Anyways, so the question is people absolutely loved Dysphoria Blues. Trans Dysphoria Blues? What's the name of that album? Trans Dysphoria Blues?
Transgender Dysphoria Blues.
Excellent album. Shapeshift with Me, somewhat of a more reserved response from the punk community as a whole, but maybe you think it's great, a listener out there. In the meanwhile, Lars Jane Grace released at least a couple solo projects. The last one was Stay Alive from 2020. A much more reserved response. People didn't love it. People kind of liked it, but it didn't set the world on fire. The question is, where's Green Day, arguably struggling for relevance, if at all, Against Me? Are they about to enter the third act? Will it be the third act, the big comeback for Against Me? Or is Against Me about to kind of settle into the, well, we'll always be here because we've always been here phase? That is, you know, good albums, not anything that's driving the national discourse or the punk discourse of art or commentary or criticism. That's the question.
Yeah, I don't know. Em, do you have a theory on this?
I think that they are going to have a third act. I don't think the party's over. I think the party is going to truly begin when they start recording. Because it's been a while, and like with like Laura Jean Grace's side projects and everything, like it seems like she'll go do something where it's like, you know, okay, you know, these songs, they're not really Against Me songs, they're like my own songs, so I want to present them in more of like a solo setting. And I think that's really helped the band. I think it's like now, like they can really kind of come together and collaborate because they, like everyone in the band has that freedom to go, like, you know, if you have songs but they don't really fit here, you can go do it yourself. You can have your solo thing. You can, you know, do all this kind of stuff and then come back. We'll be stronger for it, and then we'll put forth some new music that everybody is on board with and everybody had a hand in. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes from the recordings. But yeah, I think the best is yet to come.
I will solve the Against Me problem. Against Me has got the problem. They've got a massive catalog. You know, a lot to stack up to. I'm not a huge fan, but I'm not a hater. But they've got a massive catalog. The fans are aware of this massive catalog. Let's say they just put out another Against Me record or kind of an Against Me record. People are going to be like, oh, yeah, it's cool, it's cool. You know, that's what Hot Water Music does. No one really cares. People actually care, but no one's like, oh, the new Hot, you know. I'm not dissing on Hot Water Music, but I guess I am. Anyways, Against Me needs to follow the Rancid playbook, the Rancid Masterstroke. Rancid 5, 2000. They put out a classic punk record. They put out a classic ska / rock steady record. What do we do next? We get harder. We get faster. Against Me needs to do a hardcore record. That's the only way out of this. Or a ska record. That's the only way out. Or a metal record. That's the only way out. Against Me has to do one of those three things. If they just do kind of a rock-ish Foo Fighters type record, no one's going to be that excited. But if they do something that is a twist but has – which is what I'm looking for. Pedigree to it. They will wow the fans and the critics as well. That's what I'm saying. Or pop record. Straight up pop record would be acceptable. Just not a mid-tempo rock record. Against Me.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. There's the potential for this to be amazing, but I'm with you. I think like they would maybe just have to do something bold, right? And like, and you know, and she's doing really bold stuff with her solo work. So, you know, maybe I can't say I'm like, I don't have M's, like, I don't know if I'm feeling that optimistic about it, but you know, but I would love to be blown away by this. If they can pull it out, I think it would be, I mean, how awesome would that be if they just like took something in? I'm not saying like totally change the band, but if they took it in some slightly new direction that just made it feel fresh and made it feel exciting, I mean, it would be so fun to be blown away by an Against Me record again.
I'm saying totally change the band. I'm saying David Bowie, David Bowie and the Rolling Stones laid the template for everybody. Every three albums or so, totally change it up. But most bands don't have the guts. So like, we'll just do what's safe. You know, most bands aren't David Bowie either, so I guess that is a tall order. All right, listen. Walren forgets me. We think they can do it. Shannon and the Clams. We just let's see, one or two more stories. Oh, two more stories. This next one will probably be a quickie, but it's cool. Shannon and the Clams are putting out a new album. The new album is called Year of the Spider. The lead single is called Midnight Wine. It is a Shannon and the Clams type track. You know, it's got that 60s kind of distance garage sound with Shannon the Clams being influenced by all the Phil Spector sound and all that jazz. And it's cool. I dig it. And Shannon the Clams, very cool band. I've seen them live once or twice. And I don't know if this is going to radically change the world of Shannon the Clams, because this does just kind of seem like another Shannon the Clams record, arguably a very good one. But I don't think it's a radical change. So I think it is going to be the kind of thing that fans want, but won't, you know, blow the world up.
I'm pausing because I want to tell a story about this band, but also it's like gossipy and shitty, but I kind of want to just go there.
I'll go first. When I saw Shannon the Clams.
Go.
When I saw the spinoff band Shannon the Clams, the Yokes, it was actually at one of the it might have been a burger fest, or it might have been one of the other like Bay Area type things like that. Like, it was kind of a small thing. I think it was Burger Fest, honestly. One of the early ones, or Burger Boogaloo or whatever. This is like 2012, maybe 2013. I said, oh, wow, I really dig you guys. I'm like, do you guys have anything recorded? And she's like, well, we just formed a band, so we haven't recorded anything yet. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. That's my Santa Clam story.
Okay, so I opened for them at the Asbury Lanes, and it was like such a fun show. Bowling lanes, everyone's like eating like fries and like shitty food and like just enjoying ourselves. And like that drummer walked up to me and goes, I have to say, I really didn't enjoy the, I don't enjoy the timbre of your voice. He was like, but I find it really impressive what you can do with it. Right. So it was this like insult, but like, he like was like, I was like, dude, like, First of all, just generally, like, learn in kindergarten. Like, if you don't have something nice to say, just, like, don't say anything at all. And, like, also, like, don't give me, like, a backhanded insult. Total, do you know what I mean? Like, it
total
was
total Bay Area style. Total Bay Area style. And that I hate this band.
Well, and also, like, it's just, like, a very exemplary of the kind of shit that women in, like, in music have to deal with from, like, shitty dudes. And also, I was like, we're at a punk show. Don't say the fucking word timbre to me, you rude nerd. Like, I don't want to fucking talk about the timbre of my voice with you. Like, just everything about it was so shitty. And so, it, like, but I do like that band.
I don't now. Which one is he? Point him out.
It was the drummer at the time. And this would have been like 2008, 2009, one of those. But yeah, so I was like, it sucked because I did like that band, and it definitely really just soured me on them. I was like, how am I supposed to listen to this band now and not remember, like, Mr. Timbre? Like,
it was Ian Amberson.
What so dumb.
I hate this band now. This band is in my X list. Screw you. You're good, but you're not that good, so you get X'd. You know?
I do like this band, but
I don't. His
insults aside, I didn't think the song was great. Do you have any shit to talk about this band?
Em, tell us how this band sucks and they try too hard. I hate them now. It's the worst band. If it was Robo or Chuck Biscuits, I might have to let it slide. But because of Shannon the Clamps, these guys.
Mason and the Chowder.
Yeah, get out of here, Shannon the Clamps. You suck. We hate you. All right, listen. Let's talk about a band everybody loves, and with good cause, because this band never negs anybody, and this band only builds people up. Culture Shock, Dick Lucas. Listen, let's be real, people. Let's be real. I've interviewed a lot of bands, and honestly, the mediums are always the dicks and always the prima donnas. The icon, either super, like, famous one. Like, I've interviewed some pretty famous people. Joan Jett. Cool. You know what I mean? So the famous people are cool and the legends are cool. You know, Crass, cool. Dick Lucas and Culture Shock, cool as hell. Keith Morris, cool as hell. The legends are cool as hell. So anyway, the point being is Culture Shock, the new album's been out a little bit. They released a video for the song Penny for the Guy. It's off their new album, Mandemic. I reviewed Mandemic at Punk News. Excellent album. Culture Shock is my favorite Dick Lucas band. The new album is certainly a great addition to the discography. And the new video is kind of just Culture Shock, like hanging out in front of a pink car. It's not a radical take on music videos. It's just kind of them clowning around. I do love that Dick Lucas has literally been doing punk for 40-some years, and he has been dancing for 40 years, and he still doesn't quite have it down. But that's why we love him, because Dick Lucas is genuine, and, like, Dick Lucas is Dick Lucas. He's bona fide. His enthusiasm never flags. The new record is great. He's having more fun in his video than most bands do at 1 year in their mark, and that's why Culture Shock rules. That's why this album rules, and that's why Culture Shock will always be Cat Shannon the Clamps in any arena, and they're better. And more, Culture Shock, what are you saying?
Culture Shock are the best. Dick Lucas is the best. He is a treasure. Nothing ever, like, they're so good. I don't know. Since Mandemic's come out, I've listened to that an unhealthy amount of times. Oh, John, your part of your review is on their Bandcamp now.
Oh, it is? Kick
yeah.
ass. Kick
yeah, in
ass.
The description.
Thank you,
nice.
Dick. Let me look this up, man. I actually interviewed, not to be a book whore, but I interviewed Dick fairly significantly for the Leftover Crack book. The dude is a gentleman and a scholar and a delight. The dude is the man. Like, he is the real deal. Dick Lucas is the man. Let me check that out. I'm looking that up. Let me stroke my own ego yet again while Emma keeps talking.
I love that.
Oh, but yeah, like, Mandemic's just great, and I'm just, like, re-listening to all of their stuff, and it's just, they're one of the best bands ever, and I loved this video. They're all just, they're having fun, they're happy to be together, they're happy to play their music, you know, and then, yeah, Dick Lucas dancing is it's just joy. That's the only way I can describe it. It's just, it brings me endless happiness. You know, I could go on, but I'm going to go in a circle. So
it's so genuine, right? I think that like, that's the thing we're all saying. It's just like, it is so genuine. And like just hearing him talk, listening to his music, watching these like videos, which are like sort of like lovingly, like they're lovably sort of a little bit doofy, but like just like lovably so. And like I would say that like hearing him talk or watching his band gives me the feeling that I think the Green Day song was meant to give me, where I just kind of like breathe a sigh of relief and I'm like, maybe things will be okay. Dick Lucas is here. He's just being Dick Lucas. He's just being like wonderful. Like it does. It makes me feel optimistic, I would say, this stuff. John, have you looked up your stuff? Are you feeling? Are you basking in the glow of your?
I am really basking in my own glow. Listen, man, Dick rocks. And if you buy stuff from Blurg, which is Dick's record label, guess who packages it and mails it? Dick Lucas, the man. So listen, and actually, he even sells his paintings for way too cheap, mind you. I have a Dick Lucas original in my house I'm looking at right now. So you can buy Dick Lucas paintings for £100. Very reasonable, if you ask me. So go out and buy them. Let's play a song, come back and wrap this one up. We started out sad, but at least we're having a little bit of fun, and that's certainly the way Jack Terrycloth would want it. Hallie Bullet, play a tune.
I'm going to circle back to Spit Boy. I like this. I like the remastered song they put out just within the last few days, and it's called What Are Little Girls Made Of?
And that was Spit Boy. And listen, we started off with some news, but we had some fun. And that's what, you know, World Inferno is all about. You know, the tragedy and the comedy, if you will, in the classic sense. And more, anything else you want to shout out to the readers?
Keep hydrated. It's getting hot outside. Keep cool. Keep hydrated. Do not melt.
Hallie Bullet, you agree. Is hydration necessary in this summer season?
It is. And I've been putting these like electrolyte tablets in my water because I like forget to drink water. And then somehow I tell myself, like, if I've not drank water in like hours and hours and hours, that somehow it's going to help me to take these electrolyte tablets. And my son loves them. If I let him take like a little sip of this like bubbly, like effervescent, like electrolyte water, and he goes, "That one's so tasty, Mom. That one's so tasty." So sorry for the mom story. I had to go there. Stay hydrated. My son says it's so tasty.
And we'll see you. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. And also be sure to check out M. Moore's bonus episodes going to post soon.
Yeah.
Oh, and I should say this at the beginning of the episode. Chris Gethard, next week, we're super psyched that he's going to be on. So stay tuned for that. And I have him on the Punk's podcast. And we decided. And we also decided, listener, I'm going to give you the listener to hang around for a little episode 550. It's going to be story time. It's going to be a good time. Anyways, reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And we'll see you next week. R.I.P. Jack. Thank you.
I can't remember that one September. How the frontiers through which I crept were the displaced we forget. But the dope and the girls and the wine, oh hell, they were so fun. What a wonderful, 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 wonderful world. It's hard to remember, oh hell, any December. It just seemed I was always leaving. Zoom!